Imagine owning a piece of a multi-million dollar logistics hub right in downtown Riyadh.
Oh, that sounds ideal.
Right. Like you just collect a steady dividend from the rental income every single month, but you never, ever have to replace a blown light bulb in the warehouse.
Yeah, no climbing ladders for you.
Exactly. You never have to chase down some tenant for a late payment, and you definitely don't have to sign a, 50-page commercial lease. You literally just own the yield.
Which is wild because that scenario, I mean, it used to be exclusively reserved for institutional investors or like ultra high net worth individuals.
Right, the big players.
Yeah. But
Yep.
if you were just a regular retail investor, you were entirely locked out of that tier of commercial real estate. Just couldn't get in.
Which brings us directly to our deep dive today. We are looking at this really fascinating piece of research from 2026. It's titled, Why Fractional Ownership is Growing in Saudi Arabia.
It is such a good read.
It really is. And our mission today is to decode exactly how and why the traditional model of wealth building, specifically through real estate, is rapidly shifting. We're going to explore what it actually means for you, the modern investor, when the market moves away from buying, the whole building and starts transacting in digital slices of the property pie.
Yeah, and the backdrop for this shift is just so vital to understand. We are looking at the Saudi Arabian real estate market in 2026.
Right, which is just booming.
Booming is an understatement, honestly. The landscape is transforming at a staggering pace, heavily fueled by Vision 2030.
Yeah.
I mean, we are talking about massive infrastructure projects, rapid urban expansion, and just this enormous influx of capital flowing into mixed-use communities and tourism hubs.
Okay, let's unpack this because fractional ownership, especially right in the middle of this massive real estate boom, it isn't just a trendy buzzword anymore.
No, not at all.
It's a highly practical, structural workaround for the historically high barriers to entry in property investment.
Absolutely.
So, whether you are already managing a sophisticated portfolio or you're just insanely curious about how modern wealth is actually generated these days, this shift fundamentally challenges everything we thought we knew about ownership.
It really does.
Right.
And to appreciate why this is gaining so much traction, we have to look at the severe financial friction involved in traditional property investment.
Headaches, basically.
Oh, massive headaches. The old school model of real estate is incredibly heavy. I mean, it requires massive capital upfront.
Right.
You're tying up a huge percentage of an individual's liquidity in a single, highly illiquid asset.
Yeah, you are effectively placing this massive, highly concentrated bet on one specific location. Like, if you buy a duplex, your financial success is entirely tethered to that one street corner.
Exactly. You're putting all your eggs in one concrete basket.
Right. But beyond just the financial concentration, there is the sheer operational friction. The day-to-day reality of being a landlord is, well, it's essentially a second job.
It's exhausting. Managing physical property means navigating endless administrative burdens. You're handling tenant turnover, sudden maintenance
The
emergencies.
dreaded 4 a.m. plumbing disaster.
Yes. You're eating the costs during periods of vacancy, too. So that romanticized idea of buying a physical property often collides very quickly with reality.
Yeah, it's like wanting the benefits of a bakery's profits without having to wake up at 4 a.m. every day to, bake the bread and fix the ovens.
That is a great way to put it.
Thanks. And that's why the fractional solution is really taking off. Instead of purchasing an entire property, investors are buying shares in income-generating real estate alongside others. But I want to explore the mechanics of this because I think a lot of people listening picture fractional ownership as just like a group of friends pooling their money to buy a house together.
Oh, which sounds like a complete legal nightmare.
A total disaster waiting to happen. So
Right.
how does this actually work on the back end?
Well, what's fascinating here is the underlying financial architecture. When we talk about fractional ownership at this scale, you aren't actually splitting the physical deed of the building into tiny little pieces.
Okay.
What typically happens is the creation of a special purpose vehicle or an SPV.
NSPV, right.
Yeah, this is an independent corporate entity that's created specifically to purchase and hold that single property.
So wait, the company owns the building and you own shares in the company.
Precisely. You purchase equity in the SPV, and because those shares are digitized, they can be distributed among thousands of investors really easily.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so the SPV collects the rent, it pays for the professional property management, handles all of the taxes, and then, and this is the best part, distributes the net income back to the shareholders as dividends.
This reminds me of the evolution of the stock market.
Oh, yeah. How so?
Well, think about it. Hundreds of years ago, if you wanted to profit from global shipping, you basically had to be wealthy enough to fund an entire physical ship yourself.
Right, which almost nobody could do.
Exactly. Then the Dutch East India Company came along and said, hey, what if you just buy a fraction of the fleet? That financial technology basically democratized corporate ownership.
That is a perfect analogy.
It just feels like real estate is finally catching up to that model, but powered by, you know, 2026 digital infrastructure.
Yeah. We standardized the fractional ownership of massive corporations centuries ago, but real estate just remained stubbornly localized and physical. Now we're finally applying that same logic to brick and mortar assets.
But I got to push back on the motivation here just a little bit.
Okay, go for it.
Is this really a grand financial evolution, or is this just about convenience? Because avoiding the operational headache, avoiding that 4 a.m. plumbing emergency we talked about, it sounds a lot like investors just wanting the easy way out.
I see what you're saying.
Like, does this just boil down to people not wanting to do the hard work of property management anymore? Is it just laziness?
That's a fair question. While convenience is obviously a massive draw, I mean, who wants to fix a toilet at 4 a.m.? Right. But treating this merely as an escape from hard work really misses the underlying economic driver here, which is capital efficiency.
Okay, break that down for me.
So the centralized professional management of these SPVs gives investors the stability of passive rental income, sure. But the real magic is what it does to your liquidity and your time.
Ah, I see. You have your weekends back, and you haven't locked up your entire net worth in a single massive down payment.
Which means you have the bandwidth to deploy your resources far more strategically. When your capital isn't completely trapped in one illiquid house, and your time isn't consumed by tenant complaints, you gain maneuverability.
You can pivot.
Exactly.
And that newfound bandwidth naturally creates a new question, right? Where does all that newly freed up capital and time actually go?
Right.
And this is where we see a huge demographic and behavioral shift. A younger generation of investors is really driving this market, and their approach to wealth building is just entirely different from the traditional playbook.
It's a night and day difference. We're seeing a youth movement that is entirely native to digital investment platforms.
They do everything on their phone.
Everything. They manage their entire financial ecosystem through a screen.
Yeah.
And they prioritize flexibility, passive income, and long-term portfolio growth over the traditional prestige of physical ownership.
Yeah, they don't care about the brass plaque.
No, they do not care about having their name on a brass plaque outside a building if that building requires constant capital injections and offers poor risk-adjusted returns.
It makes sense. The old model was just highly linear. You save up, you buy a house, you spend 30 agonizing years paying off the mortgage.
You're very lucky.
Right. If you're incredibly fortunate, maybe you buy a second property. It was a slow climb up a very specific, rigid ladder.
But today's investors, they are building dynamic blended portfolios from day one.
Yeah.
They're holding fractions of real estate alongside equities, alternative investments, and private businesses all at the same time.
Which is wild to think about.
Yeah. And fractional ownership fits seamlessly into this mindset because it allows them to gain exposure to the property market without sacrificing their broader financial agility.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Because of this fractional model, the actual types of real estate you can access completely change.
Oh, absolutely.
Like if you are buying a whole property yourself, you are likely limited to a residential house or maybe a small apartment. But with the SPV structure we discussed, an everyday investor can suddenly access commercial properties, logistics assets, massive mixed-use developments.
This completely revolutionizes portfolio theory for the retail investor. Because think about it. Institutional investors have always utilized micro-diversification to protect their downside.
They spread it around.
Always. They never put all their capital into one sector or one geographic zone. Now, the everyday investor can replicate that exact institutional strategy.
Let's apply that to the 2026 Saudi market specifically, just to give a concrete example.
Sure.
You don't just buy a duplex in Riyadh and hope the neighborhood appreciates. You can take that exact same amount of capital and deploy it across completely different economic drivers.
Right.
You could buy a slice of a luxury hospitality project on the Red Sea to capture the tourism boom.
Mm.
And then buy a fraction of an e-commerce logistics warehouse in Dammam to capture supply chain growth. And you can still hold a piece of a commercial office tower in Riyadh's financial district.
And by constructing a portfolio that way, you fundamentally alter your risk profile.
How so?
Well, say the commercial office sector experiences a slight downturn due to, you know, remote work trends, your whole portfolio doesn't collapse because your logistics warehouse in Dammam might be generating record yields from the e-commerce boom.
Right, they balance each other out.
Exactly. You're balancing your exposure across completely different economic engines within the same country.
But this introduces a massive operational question.
Yep.
If I am an investor and I am spreading my capital across a Red Sea hotel, a Dammam warehouse, and a Riyadh office building, I mean, I can't physically drive around and check on all these properties.
No, definitely not.
I am putting a tremendous amount of faith in the centralized managers running those SPVs. The demand for absolute trust in the system is exponentially higher than when you just, you know, hold the physical keys to your own front door.
That is the crucial trade-off right there. You are exchanging the friction of physical management for the necessity of systemic trust.
Yeah.
If you cannot go out and touch the brick wall, the digital infrastructure holding your investment must be completely airtight.
Which brings us to a really counterintuitive shift we're seeing in 2026. You would think the companies offering these fractional shares would be shouting from the rooftops about their blockchain integration or their, I don't know, cutting-edge algorithms.
You'd think so. Yeah.
But the reality is technology is no longer the main marketing angle. It has basically faded into the background as a mere enabler.
And that is a classic sign of market maturity. In the early days of any financial innovation, the tech itself is the shiny object.
Everyone wants to talk about the blockchain.
Right.
No.
But the novelty inevitably wears off. Modern investors are prioritizing simplicity over flashy disruption now.
So if the tech is invisible, what are they actually looking for?
The asset has to speak for itself. Investors aren't buying the app interface. They're buying the real estate. They want accessible reporting, clear accounting of how the dividends are generated,
yeah,
and proof of competent professional property management. They want to know the roof isn't leaking, not how the app's code is compiled.
Makes total sense. And securing that trust relies entirely on robust regulation. This is why operational credibility has become like the single most important factor for investors in the kingdom right now.
Oh, absolutely. You cannot scale a fractional ownership market without institutional grade oversight. It just doesn't work.
And this is where REGIA comes into play, the Real Estate General Authority in Saudi Arabia. They've actually implemented a regulatory sandbox specifically for these new ownership models.
Which is such a smart move.
Yeah. And for you listening who might not be familiar with the term, a regulatory sandbox is essentially a controlled, highly supervised testing ground.
Mm-hmm.
It allows regulators to watch how a new financial product behaves in the real world, ensuring all the investor safeguards actually work before just, you know, letting it loose on the broader market.
The sandbox is specifically designed to stress test the worst case scenarios. Let's return to that SPV structure we were talking about earlier.
Okay, let's do it.
Say an investor buys a 5% stake in a commercial building through a specific prop check platform, and then suddenly that platform goes bankrupt.
A nightmare scenario.
Right. What happens to the investor's money? Well, the regulatory framework ensures that the SPV holding the building is what they call bankruptcy remote.
Meaning the building isn't considered an asset of the app that sold it to you in the first place.
Exactly. Your 5% ownership in the physical asset remains entirely secure. It's completely insulated from the operational failure of the tech company that facilitated the trade.
Wow.
And that level of structural protection is what builds real institutional trust. Transparency and regulatory compliance have become the actual product, just as much as the real estate itself.
Take an entity like Osul Gamma as a prime example of this environment in action. They aren't just, you know, throwing up an app and crowdsourcing funds like it's 2015.
Right, no.
They are a specialized property technology platform operating within these evolving regulatory frameworks to actually support professionally managed fractional ownership.
You're doing it right.
Yeah. They act as the bridge. They ensure title clarity, facilitate the SPV management, distribute the yields, and provide that mandatory transparency we just talked about.
Entities like Osul Gamma really prove that the market has evolved past the whole Wild West phase of initial disruption.
It's grown up. It has. We've moved into a structured, reliable reality where investing in a fraction of a skyscraper is just as highly regulated and standardized as buying a municipal bond. The system only scales when the centralized authority is held deeply accountable.
So what does this all mean? If we step back and look at the entire landscape of Saudi Arabia's real estate market in 2026, we are witnessing a fundamental recalibration of wealth building.
Mm.
Fractional ownership is surging because it elegantly solves the historical problems of real estate investing while perfectly aligning with modern financial behaviors. It lowers the barrier to entry, replacing massive capital requirements with, you know, accessible digital shares.
It really is a game changer.
And it removes the operational friction of property management, replacing those 4 a.m. emergencies with passive dividend collection. Plus, it enables profound micro-diversification, allowing everyday investors to spread their capital across residential, commercial, and logistics assets seamlessly.
It truly is a perfect alignment of technological capability, demographic preference, and just the sheer scale of opportunity created by Vision 2030. But, and this is important if we connect this to the bigger picture, we have to inject a very vital dose of reality regarding risk.
Yes, because lowering the barrier to entry does not mean eliminating the danger of the market. People need to remember that.
Exactly. Fractional ownership changes the mechanics of how you invest, but it does not change the fundamental nature of real estate itself.
Right. Markets still fluctuate.
Always. Commercial tenants still default on their leases. Property values can still depreciate based on macroeconomic factors. Fractional ownership allows you to spread that risk across multiple assets, which is a very sound strategy, but it does not insulate you from the reality of the market.
It is also really important to note that this isn't like an outright replacement of the traditional model either.
No, not at all.
People are still going to buy whole houses to live in. Families will still purchase physical estates to pass down through generations. Direct, singular property ownership will always hold immense appeal and utility.
Of course. Fractional ownership is simply taking its place as a mainstream, highly viable alternative. It just provides an incredibly powerful additional tool for strategic portfolio planning.
And for you listening, whether you are actively building a portfolio or simply watching the global economy evolve, this deep dive highlights a profound philosophical shift.
It really does.
For centuries, the very definition of ownership was tied to physical control. It meant a paper deed locked in a safe somewhere and a heavy set of keys in your pocket.
Right.
But today, ownership is transitioning into strategic, flexible participation. You do not need to control the entire physical structure to benefit from the economic value that structure generates in the world.
We are witnessing the complete separation of economic benefit from operational burden.
Which is undeniably brilliant from a wealth generation perspective.
Yeah.
But, you know, it leaves us with something much deeper to consider about how we relate to the built environment around us.
This raises an important question, actually. If fractional ownership scales to the point where we no longer manage, or perhaps even ever visit, the physical properties we own, how will that fundamentally alter our emotional connection to our cities?
Wow, yeah.
When you own a house in a neighborhood, you care about the local schools, the condition of the sidewalks, the whole fabric of the community.
Because you live there, or at least manage it directly.
Right. But when your ownership is purely digital, entirely frictionless, and distributed across a dozen different cities you've never even visited, do we lose our sense of physical civic investment? Or do we simply evolve, becoming financial citizens of a much broader interconnected world?
It is a staggering thought. The brick walls are still out there somewhere, generating your returns, but your relationship to them has become entirely abstract.
Mm.
It is something to seriously think about the next time you consider what it really means to own a piece of the world.
An excellent point to reflect on.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.